Okay, cool. So this is a little informal, so I'm just gonna go through some of my previous work and give you a little bit on my background and my previous work with field recording and share a bunch of examples with what I do, and then I'm gonna do another presentation on Sunday that'll focus on all the stuff that I've been recording while at Holden, but this gives you a little more of an idea of what I actually do, and it should be fun to see some of the sounds. So yeah, basically my background was in music composition. So I went to undergrad for music composition, wrote a bunch of music, not really songs as much, mostly like wind ensemble and orchestra and choir pieces and chamber music and that sort of thing. And was on track to thinking I was going to be a professor for a long time and teach music composition and do all that. And then, but I gradually figured out that I could try to make a living outside recording things instead of writing music as much. So I still write a lot of music, but been mostly focused on the field recording for the last few years. But I got into the recording mainly because in grad school I was writing a lot of music that had a lot of multimedia elements. It was had video. I was using my own field recordings in my music, and I also learned a lot of audio engineering skills and was doing a lot of live sound, so working the mixer and everything for live performances and everything. So I learned all the recording skills from that, and then gradually figured out that I could kind of put together my love of being outdoors, and then also put that together with the field recording. So I'm going to talk you through, that's just a little bit on my background, and then, so I've been mostly focused on field recording for the last 5 years or so, and so I've been mostly traveling around the United States and Canada and Alaska for the last few years in various regions. And so usually what I like to do is visit a new location that I haven't been to before, where that's a new ecosystem, whether it's deserts or timber rainforests or getting up to Alaska, closer to the Arctic. And so I started most of my field recording in West Texas, where my parents had retired out there. And if any of you have been to Big Bend National Park, it's close to there. But it looks a lot like New Mexico. There's actually some pretty big mountains out in West Texas. So this was where I started doing a lot of the recording. So one of my favorite things to record is weather. I started doing a lot of that in West Texas, and so they get these crazy windstorms and thunderstorms out there in the all times of the year, mostly the thunderstorms in the summer though. So this is a little time-lapse video of some of my wind recordings. So this is a compilation of different recordings, so it's not just it's going to meld between different types of wind sounds. There's also some drony, like bowed vibraphone sounds in there those aren't in the wind, but there's some pretty drones with the wind. But and this is some time-lapse photography that I took from the top of this mountain. So yeah, here's a couple examples of the high desert winds that I recorded. So again, this is kind of a collage of a bunch of different clips. So they're like every few seconds, it changes to a different type of wind sound. So it's not supposed to be one continuous recording. So that's a little bit of wind from West Texas. So usually the foliage that the wind is blowing through gives it the character, right? So in West Texas, there's not much. There's very small trees and shrubs and mostly grass. And so you're mostly getting the roar off the ridgetops and the grass and everything. And so like here, the Douglas, the short pine needles, Douglas fir and spruce and the coniferous forest is a very different character than that type of wind. And some, or a deciduous forest is going to have a very different character. Or one of the really interesting things is usually it's the size of the foliage determines the pitch of the wind. So if you have a fir tree, it's kind of a higher, kind of hissier wind than like if you had a bunch of, I think there's more ponderosa pine down by the lake, but it has a much longer needle, and so it's kind of more of a roar to it. And the same thing can happen with deciduous leaves and things as well. But so there's lots of different characters to things, and then it's always fun to try to. There were some clips in there that had wind whistles and howls and things. So those are usually you have to do some work to try to find those. Or usually those are wind blowing through wires, or if you crack windows. And there's lots of ways to kind of bring out the whistles and everything that give it kind of a eerie character and everything. So that's one kind of wind. And then another, another kind of wind. So the first one had some droney sounds in the recording. These are actually meant to be in there. So I don't know if you've ever heard like a aeolian harp or a wind harp, but it's basically if you have really high winds, you can actually turn a guitar into a wind harp. And so basically what I did is I took my guitar and you tune it in open A tuning, so it's a pretty chord. With the open strings, and it takes you could probably have done it today. It was like 40 mile an hour winds up on the tailings up there today. But basically, what you do is you stick it out in really high winds, and you can get it to make these really pretty drones, where basically the wind is resonating the strings. And so there's an actual way you can build an aeolian harp or a simple version is you just take a real harp and put it out in the wind and you hear that sound. But this was fun. It has a lot of unique challenges of how do you actually get the recordings to not just sound... Basically, it's very difficult to record in 50-mile-an-hour winds. But I figured out some tricks, and basically what you get are these really pretty lush drones. So the first recording, the drones were just in there added. These are actually part of the recordings, and so the wind is actually playing it. And so what you're looking at here, if you haven't looked at a spectrogram before, along the x-axis is just time, and then the y-axis is frequency, and then this top one up here is your left ear, the bottom one is your right ear, so there's two channels. So this is stereo, two channels, and it would just, it's the L up here is coming out of the left side, the right's coming out of the right side, that's all it is. But it's just a neat way to visualize, and so you can see, like, that's a little drone. You can see the different, like here, these kind of wiggling wind whistles that you'll hear. And so a lot of the things I'm going to show you, we're going to look at the spectrogram because that makes it a little more interesting. So that's all this is. Here's a few clips of this. We probably won't listen to this whole one because it's a little longer, but these are really pretty. Again, this is a compilation, so it's every few seconds it switches to a different clip.
Different movement?
So this is like 25 different clips, and each one is switching between them. So this is meant to be a demo of like the whole sound library. Thank you. kids are fun. So I stuck the guitar in this really high grass. And so the wind is both resonating the strings and then it's also hitting the grass, which is playing the strings when it hits it. So it gives it this pingy kind of quality. This next clip, if you've ever heard, it just brings out really weird overtones with this. You ever heard like Tuban throat singing or something?
Yeah.
It sounds kind of like that.
This
clip especially. That's a little bit of wind harp that goes on for a long time, so there's lots of different characters of that. Y'all should build a wind harp here, because they're really pretty, and they're not that hard to build. All you have to do is make a kind of a resonant body, and then build a bridge, and string some guitar strings up, and there's YouTube videos. They're really pretty, and you can make ones that play in 5 or 10 mile an hour winds. They don't have to be. And guitar is not really made to do this, so you have to have really high winds. So that's a little bit of wind harp. So I'm going to go through a few different kinds of weather sounds I like to record. Then I'll look at some wildlife, and then I'll get into more of the. There's kind of two big categories of the things that I recorded. Ambiences being wind and weather, and then. I record sound design materials that's usually an isolated element. It could be a bunch of metal sounds or glass sounds or water sounds. It could be a specific animal. So first we'll look at the ambiences, and then we'll look at some of the sound design stuff. So that was West Texas. We're gonna do one other West Texas one. So these thunderstorms were pretty crazy.
Wow.
So this demo has a little bit of music in it, but the thunder's crazy loud. So these storms in West Texas were really fun. Basically, you can go from 95 degrees to hailing in a few minutes. So these big supercells build up, and I was up in this mountain valley, and basically, there was a kind of carport I could get the mics under, so I put the mics under that. I'd get it set, and then I'd just like get away from the gear as much, because there were strikes within a quarter mile and everything. So you kind of have to. It was really fun because you have to set the gain on the recorder, because if the level is set too high, you get the like sort of distorted sound. And so like I would learn to see how bright the lightning strike was, and then dependent on how bright the flash was, I would know what to set the gain, because if the flash was brighter, I'd know it was really close, and if it was super bright, I would basically like turn it all the way down and just like get away and plug my ears. And then sometimes they'll be distant and really rumbly and pretty. It was super fun too. It's about 10 different storms in a lot of ways, but this is really mountain valleys. Like if you have thunder in here, I'm sure if y'all have heard it. Do y'all get a lot of thunder here?
Not too often, but sometimes.
Yeah. Anytime you hear it in a mountain valley like this, it can, especially a really narrow one like this, it just bounces back and forth and it rumbles forever. And this is a similar kind of valley in West Texas. It's not as tall of a valley as here, but anyway, here's some thunder. Let me make sure this isn't going to be crazy loud. Thank you. So there's some rain sounds in the background, and most rain recordings you'll hear in any kind of movie or anything, they're almost always recorded from underneath a structure. So if you listen to this rain, it sounds like it's under a porch, if you really listen to it, versus the next thing I'm going to show you was I figured out a way to basically record rain from within a forest. And so there's subtleties to that, but like if you really listen to it, this rain sounds like it's under a porch, and then the next clip sounds like it's actually in the forest. This last clip here, it you hear the thunderclap and then you hear it bounce across the valley. So listen for the, I think it's left to right, left, right, left, I'm not sure, but it has a really cool bounce across the valley. So that's thunder. Really fun to record. It's a similar danger level to avalanches, I think.
Yeah.
Trying to record avalanches around here. There's ways to try to do it safely, but it's always a little dangerous. So that was some West Texas thunderstorms. We're gonna jump to Alaska. I was playing a little bit of this at the beginning. So the only difference with this recording is this is a surround sound recording, which you're not going to hear here. So right now you're just listening to this channel on this channel. There's four because it'd be 1, 2, 3, 4 for surround sound, but it sounds good like it is. So this is, I'll play a little bit of the thunder, and then I want to show the difference in the rain, because this is the rain at the end. Here's a little bit of the thunder. So as a field recorder, it's like a lot of times you're trying to record things that are isolated. So the last things that I showed you, those were just thunder, right? So in general, that's more difficult to get, and it's more valuable in some ways because it doesn't have the birds, because all of the birds in the background of this, that can only be used in situations where you're using thunder in a production that either is in Alaska or is in North America or something, because you can get away with a lot, but people often notice when you are using wildlife from Europe or something in a North American production or something. They don't normally try to use like jungle sounds in the wrong place or something. But
yes, but can I complain momentarily about
how
they always use red tails, hawk call for
the
bald
eagle? Yeah, it's yeah, for sure. And if y'all have any questions, please jump in. This is pretty informal, so. So the only thing I want to point out with this, so it's actually really, really difficult to record rain or snow in a way that is not just under a covered structure. So if you listen carefully to a lot of, like next time you watch a movie and you hear rain sounds, it most often sounds it like the scene is like they're out in the water and everybody's wet, but the rain actually sounds like it was recorded under a porch, if you really listen to it. And So a buddy of mine, another field recordist, we basically figured out a way to waterproof the microphone blimp that I had shown you. And it's basically you take the blimp, there's the furry outer cover, and then there's an inner cover, this kind of neoprene cover. And basically he had the idea that if we can try to cover this stuff with Nix Wax, which is kind of like it's a water repellent molecule, kind of like Gore-Tex or something. And so we sprayed Nix Wax on that, and we weren't sure whether, because supposedly you can see that the water beads up and it rolls off, and supposedly it lets the air through so that the sound can come through, but we weren't sure whether it was going to make the recording sound bad because it wasn't really acoustically transparent. It wasn't letting the sound waves through. But basically we figured it out, and at some point you just have to leave the thing out in the rain. And so one of the first times I did it, I was in Alaska, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to leave this multi-$1,000 set of microphones out in the rain. And luckily the thing works, and it waterproofs pretty well. But until pretty recently, nobody had really tried to do that. And so that's kind of game changer in the way that I'm recording, because now I can leave the rig out in the snow or the rain. And normally you would always have to be out there with it or recording in shorter stretches. And it also gives you the ability to actually get the sound of the rain in the forest, which is very different than being on a porch somewhere. And so this is in Alaska, which was mostly a deciduous forest. So it was cottonwood and birch trees. And so it's kind of the sound of a million drops hitting all of the deciduous trees. And then you basically get the microphone blimp set up underneath a kind of natural low canopy of leaves, so that that's catching most of the drips, because you can get like a thumping sort of sound when the drips are hitting the blimp. So there's various subtleties to eventually getting it. But basically, rain is hard to record, but it's not obviously hard to record. So here's a few clips of that. So that's just really, really light rain. It'll get a little denser when it gets to here. That's a Swainson's thrush coming up. I like this density of rain right here. It's going to taper off and you get some bigger drips. And you get some real heavy rain. So, next time you watch a movie, listen for whether or not the rain sound actually sounds like it's in the space it should be, because it usually doesn't. So that's a little bit of rain, and that's the last of the weather I wanna show you. And then so we're gonna look at some animals now. So we're gonna go through various. So these are still ambience libraries because it's I do some sound design stuff. Like I'm gonna show you some close-up recordings of hummingbirds and in a little bit, but those are specific close-up recordings. These are animal focused, like all of these ambiences focus on coyotes, but they're still long ambiences, and it's, anything I'm calling an ambience is usually anywhere from 3 to 30 minutes. A sound design recording would be a close-up short recording of just a hummingbird humming or darting around or something like that. So these are some coyotes. Let's show you these first. So these are in West Texas. Normally coyotes are, they can be very playful and yippy and they have a lot of character, but these recordings were right after my parents' place almost burned down in a wildfire out there, and so there's a 20,000 acre fire or so out there, and the fire had burnt to just like the ridge line right up to where the house was. And normally you didn't get coyotes up in the valley. They liked it down in the plains where more of the jackrabbits were. But I'm pretty sure these coyotes had been running from the wildfire and had just made it out, because they have some really, like they don't have the playful character that I would normally hear. And it's just, they're just really mournful kind of hunting howls. Mm-hmm. And so like, I really think they just had a very bad day. Running from a wildfire, and were they just sound upset to me. So maybe you'll hear that too. But oh, and the thing up here, these are bats. All. So my mics can pick up ultrasonic stuff, so we can hear from up to about 20,000 hertz, from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. My mics can pick up to 50,000 hertz. And so there's bat clicks up there. I'll show you those in a minute, but. I'm gonna try to focus on the coyotes for a second. So those are pretty beautiful, and they
is that the natural reverberation of where you recorded from?
Yeah, there's no all of these recordings are
not processed with.
Yeah, there's not processed. There's no reverb put on them. There's mild EQ. But yeah, these are just the raw recording. That was just the resonance in the valley, which was pretty crazy. So yeah, that, yeah, let me show you the bat clicks real quick. Let's do these. So if I take this and then I pitch shift them down, which is basically like slowing the recording down. So normally, so if I play the recording this way, you can't hear it. You can hear a little bit of click. Okay, and then I do this, which basically slows it down or pitch shifts it down 2 octaves, and then you can hear the bats. So that kind of sound like birds.
So regular.
Yeah, they're trying not to crash, I guess. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So the bat frequencies, they can be anywhere from 20,000 hertz all the way up to like 90,000 hertz. So they can be really high, or even higher than that. There's special mics that bat researchers use. And then one other coyote clip I'm going to use, or show you. This has some crickets over top of it, but this, the echo is just crazy. Just listen to the echo. It's like,
wow.
I don't even know, it's one, two, three, it's like 4 or 5 second reverb tail. So, those are really pretty. So a lot of it, it's about finding the coyote and recording it, but it's also recording the coyote in the right space. Because if you record that coyote out on a plane where there's no reverberation, or at like just a big flat space, it's not going to sound as cool. So if you can get them in a resonant space, that matters a lot. So that's some coyotes. Time for some owls. So these are pretty. So these are similar. These are bands of crickets. These are, I think they're actually labeled great. So these are great horned owls and western screech owls. So these lower, can y'all see the mouse moving around? These lower ones are great horned owls. These bouncing ball things are western screech owls. The barred owls. I'll just pause in between and talk about the owls. So this is West Texas. Great horned owls you get around here. Various people have told me you've heard them. They're the like stereotypical owl sound. Then the western screech owl, more of a southwest owl. I'm not sure what their full range is. I don't think they live up here though. That's some pretty owls. This one's okay. So this next one's on the Olympic Peninsula, in the Ho Rainforest in Olympic National Park. So you hear the roar of the Ho River coming down the valley, and then this kind of distant barred owl in the middle of the night. So he's mostly, so in the spectrogram you can see there's not as much color right there, and there's more color on the right side, so you'll hear the owl more out of the right speaker than you will the left speaker. This was in near Lake Superior, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. So you got like deciduous forest wind and an owl. Those are really far off though. Oh, this is my one close up of a great horned owl. Still not that close, but he's sort of close. Common porwell, that's actually a night bird. There's a family called nightjars that make similar to owl sounds. They're pretty. And then these guys are.
Hey Tom, before you go there.
Yeah, sure.
Well, those one great horned, they like had two lines right there. Those little, to the left.
This one?
No, keep going to the left. They're like little O's.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
How does that work? Is there two frequencies happening? Or
yeah, what? So that was close enough that you actually got the second harmonic on the sound.
Okay.
So these other ones are
so cool. are
farther away. So I'll show you another example. We'll get to this later, but so for example, these are some crazy kind of elk bugling things. But the bass harmonic is like that, and then you can see the other harmonics on top of it. Uh-huh. And so...
So like the bottom brightest would be the fundamental?
Yes. And so the character of the harmonics is basically what's giving you the character of the sound, and it's the same thing that makes a piano playing a C sound different than a trombone playing a C, is the amount of the harmonics above it. So yeah, so the owl's close enough that my mic's picked up the higher harmonic, and then most of these other ones, they're further away. Couple other owls. This is a boreal owl, which I think you can get here too. I think y'all are
northern saw-wet, yeah.
Northern saw-wet for sure, yeah, and maybe a boreal.
Less weird.
They're my favorite. The northern saw-wet.
They kind of sound like an alarm clock.
Well, they're my favorite. This is a boreal owl. I'll show you some saw-wets in a second. Has a kind of rising call. So listen to this first. So this kind of distant, it definitely has a little bit of an alarm clock.
Going like all night.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure it would be annoying if you weren't trying to record it, but I like it because it's this steady pitch, and then it actually varies a little bit in pitch up and down. It wiggles, and so it's really pretty. Yeah, I can see how if that was right by your window or something.
Hours, he's going for hours. Out by the car, they so
like. Yeah, that's. And there's another.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it.
And the sound. In my community in the 1960s, they recorded saw-wet owls, and they were convinced that it was a fly. It was a aliens. And seriously, the TV station came from Seattle, and yeah, I wonder if you could find those recordings
too.
Yeah.
So owls are great. But yeah, the northern saw-wet, it's if you get it in the right space, it has a really pretty flute-like sound.
Are you gonna show us those elf bugles?
We're gonna get to that. That was just a little teaser.
I mean, it looks like you teased us like there.
Yeah, when you noticed the harmonic thing, so I had to.
Smaller
had to
larger.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are on now for some. Here we go. Real quick. Foxes make crazy sounds. I thought this was a bear, actually, like a bear cub, because they make similar sounds. But I heard this in the middle of the night, and I was like, "What? What is this?"
Well, how did you find out then?
The internet. I don't.
There's a recording of this in Pride and Prejudice. It's very specific in the scene,
oh, yeah?
And it happens twice in a row like that.
Wow.
They make all sorts of crazy sounds.
That's a big sound for such a small
version.
Oh, okay. The better version.
These are... I'm going to go through the animals a little faster because I have a lot of animals. These are some really cool... They're called javelina. They're like little pigs in West Texas.
Javelina. So annoying,
we call them suicide pigs because they like to run out in front of your car. It's very sad.
They also
will
eat all of your plants.
Oh, yeah. They'll eat anything. But they sound pretty cool. They click their teeth. Sorry, stampede.
Are these wild?
Yeah, these are wild. These are trying to eat my mics. There's a little herd of them. There's probably 5 to 10 or so. West Texas.
How big are they?
They're like that big. They're like 30 pounds.
Now
So they make crazy sounds.
They are a little terrifying, and they're kind of cute.
Yeah, they're kind of cute. Yeah, they're kind of cute.
Because they're so ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're. If you see them, if you like hear them when they're in high grass and you don't can't see them though, they're scary. This is one of my favorite. Y'all are gonna recognize this because you have some of these guys that live here. So, but these are some pretty close up recordings of some Chihuahuan ravens. Are a little bit subspecies of ravens, so they might sound a little different than the ravens here. But this is a really close flyby, and you can hear their wings whooshing because their wings are super loud. So these will be familiar, but I like these a lot. We had a pair that lived in the valley. It's kind of like this. They were around all the time. Character. They're fun birds. They're super smart. They're like dolphin smart. They can recognize people's faces and they're fun birds.
Have you ever gotten that kind of bell tone that they make?
I don't think so. Yeah. That's most of what I have.
They have like 18 different voices.
Yeah.
At least. Yeah. And there's one I can't figure how they do it. It's like a bell sound.
Yeah, they have
by Imco when we were walking along the road with my daughter, and they were up just right in the tree, and another set of ravens had come in, but they were doing that before the other set came in, so I wondered if it had something to do with that.
Uh-huh.
I know the sound you're talking about.
I can't do it. I don't know how to do it.
So this bird, if there were still pterodactyls, this is what they would sound like. these birds are crazy. Skip ahead a little bit to where they're flying around making noise. Yeah, it was a sandhill crane. Sorry, I forgot to tell you what it actually was. It's not a pterodactyl, it is a sandhill crane. So they make those calls and then they do these. Where's the other one? Yeah, they do these kind of trumpeting things while they're flying around. On the Upper Peninsula of Michigan near Lake Superior. They're pretty fantastic birds.
Have you ever seen them dance?
No.
They jump way up high off the ground, like 3 feet off the ground, and they...
It's like their mating dance?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a giant amount of...
Sandhill crane.
Yeah, big, pretty birds. I think my favorite bird, though, that I think you get around here is our loons.
Are there loons here?
Maybe?
Yeah.
No?
No, we got loons down at the lake.
You could.
Yeah. They're on Columbia.
You could, maybe, But, I mean, the first time I heard a loon, I was in Glacier National Park in Montana, and I hear this off in the distance. I'm like, oh, I just recorded a wolf. Turns out it's like a duck, but it makes these fantastic sounds. Because I heard this off in the distance, basically.
It looks like one. Right.
Like, I thought that was a wolf or something.
Yeah.
Right? And then they make these crazy... There's a tremolo call, which is this one. So there's going to be a flyby. There's various ones. This one's really close. Oh, and they're really bad at taking off from the water.
Hey, their bones are dense.
No,
they're
I know, but
birds.
They just take forever.
Yeah, I know,
it's,
I know.
It's good, because just listen to how long it takes to take. This is a loon trying to take off. It takes, like, the whole pond.
Yeah.
And he's up. And he starts calling him.
I did it.
Yeah. So there's those. So these are called whale calls. Those are really pretty. And then the, I'm pretty sure this one's called a yodel, which is the best. Those are some loons. So I camped out for like 5 nights straight at this one pond because there's a nesting pair of these loons. And I was 4 or 5 nights trying to get these loons because they tend to make a lot of noise at night. So I was trying to get isolated ones with them at night. But beautiful birds. But it's basically a duck and it makes all these crazy sounds.
In Minnesota, it's illegal to play loon recordings outside, because it disrupts their nesting.
Huh. Oh. That's that's good to not. I won't play them inside.
I used to do sea cat tours, and I got so I could call them, and they would call back. I was messing with them.
Really, High desert chainsaw.
There's some other stuff in here. Now you can read so that list is like all of my sound design libraries, and I'm going to show you some of those. So like, yes, I've recorded chainsaws.
Curious
but
bears.
I'm not going to show you the chainsaws. It just sounds like a chainsaw. So all the stuff previous that was ambience libraries. That's weather, wind, longer recordings that have wildlife in them, and then the sound design stuff. That's usually an isolated type of sound that. A sound designer will use to make something that doesn't exist, right? So they'll, like a lot of sound designers, they'll turn this into a fairy sound or something. There's some DJ, he used the hum to make like an EDM bass line. So like you can do anything with these sounds, but basically I'm trying to record the isolated sound of that one thing versus an ambience, which is usually a collection of a lot of things and is over three minutes long. This was me setting up these. I got them. They did not mind the mic, and so I had it. They didn't like the fluffy thing, so I took the furry thing off. They kind of dogfight. And so they're all right up next to it. So this is out in West Texas, and so these are mostly rufous hummingbirds. They sound pretty crazy. So there's 5 or 6 of them. So you'll notice, or I'm just going to play it and stop talking for a second. So one thing to point out, so the females, they have this really pretty iridescence on the back. The females have a much, at least of this species, basically the frequency of their hum is dependent on how fast they flap. Mm-hmm. And so if they flap 50 times a second, they have a deeper purr to their hum. And then there's this male that's going to come in from the left, and you'll hear a kind of high whine in his hum. Mm-hmm. And it's like an evolved thing so that you know that he's coming. And then they get really territorial and they dogfight and stuff. But listen to the difference in the sounds of the females. And then it's mostly females, and then there's one kind of red and black one is the male one. He's going to come in from the left, I think.
Yeah.
Here's a whine. The female's really, it kind of purrs. Yeah, they dogfight. It's pretty crazy. Isolated close to them too, but that's the easiest way to show it.
So can you hear that difference with your naked ears or only with the microphone?
Yeah, I mean, if you were 3 inches from the hummingbirds,
right.
Like yeah, I think everybody's heard hummingbirds, but the clarity and definition from miking them with really sensitive mics from 3 inches, you get these really interesting sounds. So.
Have you gotten them J-stroking when they go up high and then the males do it in the breeding season in the springtime?
When they dive bomb?
Yeah.
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 I would just call it, what's it called?
J-stroke.
Oh.
They go really high and then come down a little boom.
Yeah, yeah. They were doing that. They were doing the dive bomb thing, yeah. So they go up really high and it's, they actually impact in midair, and so you get this kind of textured wing impact sort of sound.
Wow.
They bounce off each other, and they're crazy little birds. So let's do another couple sound design. This one's more of a standard recording sort of thing, so a bunch of metal sounds. So I had a lot of what I do is just try to find really interesting sounds that I can record. This was this giant metal corral and all these interlocking gates, and they all kind of resonate together. And sometimes sound designers need gritty metallic kind of textures. And so this is the version of it at the beginning. You get this giant gate kind of pitched groaning sound. It's pretty intense, but. So that's the normal version, and then you pitch it down an octave, and it sounds like a Hans Zimmer drone. This one's fun. So some of that's the kind of stuff I do. Sometimes you're just trying to find, sometimes you find some gates that make really awesome sounds. So that's a lot of the sound design stuff. You're working within a category of metal sounds or wood sounds or glass sounds or animal vocalizations or something like that. So
we pitch that to the people who are going to use it. Like, this is a creepy metal gate, or it's like.
So I would put like that's put together in a sound library of metal sounds, and then the sound designers that are coming and looking at that, they have a pretty good idea of what they can do with it when they hear the normal sound. And so, like, them listening to, like I'm showing you the pitch shifted kind of design version on purpose because the normal sounds are really intense. And so basically the sound designers are pretty good at knowing the potential of a sound when they hear it. And so you don't have to, they actually want to hear the raw version and hear how good the recording is and not like put together in a way that makes it harder to hear the actual sound.
Can we hear the bug cactus?
I told you about that. Okay, I guess we'll do that one. So this one's kind of weird, but it goes along with the metal chorale kind of sounds a little bit. So sound designers like any kind of gritty kind of texture. That a lot of these can be made into creature vocalization. So if they need to make a dragon roar or something, they're gonna take something like this and mix it with a lion roar and maybe a sea lion vocalization or something, and then that's what you hear in Game of Thrones or something. And so so it turns out if you get just bear with me, it's a weird thing, but if you get a cactus that has over 1-inch spines on it and then you bow it with a violin bow, you can actually get these pretty insane sounds that so cactus like this are actually really hard to find, cactus like this, but basically it has this really cool grittiness to the needle, and so when you bow that and then you mic it from really close, you get these really intense gritty textures that, so I'm going to turn this down, because this is the normal version. It's supposed to be really, it's very chalkboard-like. I'm not going to play a lot of it, but. So there's that.
Yeah.
But listen to it now. That's not the one I want. Which one do I want? Oh, I'm on the wrong. Sorry. I want the first bode. I've done multiple bode cactus things. Sorry. So this is the pitch shifted version of it. So this sounds like a dinosaur. This is the normal bode cactus, and then it's pitch shifted down an octave. This is more how it would actually be used. Right? So, like, you combine that with a lion, and you get Jurassic Park kind of stuff, or, like, this sort of thing. Right? Like, that sounds like a creature. All I've done is pitch shift that, so... So that's the bowed cactus one. So sometimes, like, the original version is very intense, but then what sound designers can do with that, you can make some pretty fun things. So that's kind of what I specialize in, is these. Because a lot of field recordists, they record guns and cars and airplanes and explosions, because there's a lot of need for that in movies. I don't really want to do that for a variety of reasons. And so I kind of specialize in nature recordings and then these kind of niche sound design things where it's hard to invent a new category of sound like wood or glass or metal or something, but like this was my one-hit wonder with the sound designers was the bowed cactus. They're like, what? They're like, what? Yeah. And then they listened to it and then they lost their mind, so it was pretty...
How did you come up with that?
This was actually came out of a... I tend to, this goes back to my composing days with like academic new music. You ever heard of John Cage? Does some weird stuff. He has this piece for like amplified cactus where they put contact mics and bowed the needles and stuff. And so what I tend to do is I steal ideas from new music composers that are tending to they've come up with a really cool sound, but that they've just packaged it in a way that is very kind of high art and maybe a little pretentious. And then I just take the really interesting part of the sound and then I extrapolate that and make some interesting sound library out of it. So,
okay. Tom, when you go to a movie, are you sitting there the whole time going, I know what that sound came from? It's like, you know, dropped an octave and it's a, you know, do you do that?
Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I like movies that, I mean, I like really good music in movies as well, but I like movies that are heavy on sound design. Like, like if you watched Chernobyl on HBO,
yeah.
It has these incredible drones the whole time, that are stuff like the Metal Corral kind of stuff, kind of drones, or like First Man. You ever seen a new astronaut movie a few months ago or last year? Has this incredible scene at the beginning of it that's all sound design. It's the most intense metal kind of shaking sounds. The Arrival is a really good sci-fi movie that has really cool sound design and not as much score. So I tend to like things like that. But yeah, it doesn't bother me as much as you would think. I don't like it when I hear bad things, but like the lack of things. Occasionally it bothers me if I hear like the wrong birds in the wrong country or something, but like, so real quick, here's just like a little video of the actual cactus thing. This is normal speed, so it's very intense. All right, so I'm not going to do that a long time, but that gives you an idea. So there's that, and then there's like these little cactus. And it's, but these sounds are really, really quiet, so you have to have really sensitive mics. But anyway, I don't show people the boat cactus thing first. But so you got me to show the boat cactus. Here's a more interesting kind of normal one. So I'm gonna tell you the story first. So my sister's a geologist. She went to school in New Jersey. This is before I lived in Philly, actually. But so there's a place called Ringing Rocks County Park. This near Philadelphia, and my sister said, "Oh, you got to go with me." I was up there to visit her. She said, "There's this really cool sounding place," and I was like, "Yeah, yeah, whatever." And she's like, "Yeah, you go out in this boulder field and you hit it with a hammer, and it sounds like a chime." Yeah, I'm like, "Yeah, right." And so I go out there with her, and you walk into this giant boulder field. Let me show you a picture.
Where's it at again?
It looks like that. It's outside of Philly, about an hour out of Philly.
And the hammers are already there?
No, you gotta bring your own hammers. It's BYO. but they have these little orange spots where you see people have hit them. Anyway, long story short, I walk out there and
how
take
did
a hammer.
Discover this?
My sister found out. There's some geology nerd field trip that she went on. And she told me about this, and I was highly skeptical. And then you walk out there and you just hit it with a hammer. My sister has these like big. These are just normal hammers, but she has these big, awesome, like, legit rock hammers and stuff because she's a cracks rocks. Anyway, you hit the thing, and it sounds like a bell or a chime or, like, a kind of glockenspiel. And the whole field's kind of in the key of B-flat, so there's lots of B-flats and Fs, which is really fun. So, yeah, here's a few clips of those. So this like, there's three distinct pitches on this rock. So that's really fun. And then I actually, I'm going to show you the full demo of this one because it's fun. So this is all just the rock sounds, and then I put it together into this little, it's like a little piece of music. But So these are all the hits. All I've done is like map the hits into rhythms. So it starts with the scrapey textures, and then it gets to the impacts, and these are all the different bell hits or where those impacts are. So I'm gonna let you listen to this one. It's about a minute and a half. It's pretty fun. So this is like a scraping with the crowbar kind of stuff. So, yeah, that was fun. And
did she tell you the geologic reason why these rocks are more ringy?
She basically, it was actually, it's not like glacial boulders. It was actually a sheet of rock that's been weathered down, and it's some combination of like the content of the rock and metallic content in the rock, and then just the way that they're most of the ones that sound great are just barely balanced on like one or they're just barely touching other rocks so they can actually resonate. And I think that's part of what's unusual. There's a place in Montana that is very similar. I forget the name. I don't know if it has a name. It's like on BLM land, but it if you Google Ringing Rocks Montana, there's a similar place that is closer to here to visit, but you can go out and do that. So
metallic content of the rocks, do you mean elemental metal or like metal oxide?
I don't know. Basically the answer my sister would give me is that like they don't really know why some of the rocks do that. Yeah. But I always assumed it was the content, whether it's I don't have a better answer.
Because it sounds like a big cast iron cast and kind of has that kind of like
right.
Really damped ring to it.
Yeah. So
it's a mystery.
Yeah, I know. It just sounds cool. I don't know why it doesn't, but okay, got two more things for you. This is the Sika deer that I did a little teaser of earlier. So they're sort of like elk. If you've heard elk bugling up here, probably it's a pretty intense sound. But Sika deer are originally from various parts of Asia, but they had them. This is near San Antonio. There's these hunting ranches around Texas that bring in exotic animals and then they get loose.
Yeah.
And so the Sika deer are wild now. They're basically like a normal deer, but they have spots as adults. But they bugle like elk do, and they basically sound like a really angry adolescent elk. or like, they just have really intense calls. But I got them in this mountain valley, or this kind of hill country valley near San Antonio a few months ago. Yeah, so this was the example of the seeing the higher harmonics, because they're they're quite close. So these are the kinds of things that anytime you can get an isolated animal vocalization, sound designers like that, because then they can combine that into whatever they're working on. They're going to turn a sea lion vocalization into an orc in Lord of the Rings or something. So these are, the first ones are kind of chirpy, and then they get kind of intense with these elk kind of vocalizations. So this is a deer, basically. really distant ones. It's gonna get kind of loud. I'm gonna turn it down. Let it get better. So, yeah, I went to visit my dad over Christmas. He'd moved to a different place, and I hear this outside of my bedroom window, and I'm like, what is that? There's not elk in Texas, and like, what is that sound? Because I'm like, is that a fox? Is that like, it's not. It's a sika deer. So they make really cool sounds. Oh, and there's some pretty haunting ones at the end. So that's Sika Deer. It was one of my newer projects. Sometimes they're just right outside the window making crazy sounds. And then this Birds in Flight is sort of a mix of an ambience library with a... So these are isolated clips of... It's actually really hard to get... Anytime you're hearing a wing sound in a video game or a movie, it's often just somebody like... like making a whooshing sound by a microphone.
Yeah.
And so it's actually really hard to get birds close enough to the microphones as you're hearing their wing sounds or their fluttering or the flybys. And so since I started having this waterproof blimp, I could leave the recorder out for a long period of time. And so I gradually started to collect these flybys of really close bird flybys. And so I'm going to let you listen to this whole thing because this is... It's just kind of like a greatest hits of all the birds that I've recorded. And so this has water bird flybys, ducks. It has takeoffs. It has common loons flying by. It has giant wild turkeys taking off. It has these little swifts darting around. It has fluttering birds dancing right in front of the mics. Common loon, that's a repeat from earlier. Wilson snipes make these crazy sounds. And then some hawks going crazy at the end. So let's listen to a few of these. So a lot of these have really interesting like left to right or right to left spatialization. So listen to them zoom around as they fly by the mics. A duck coming in. Bunch of ducks taking off and they're going to fly by. The loon from earlier. He's still trying to take off. I think this is a turkey. This next one. Yeah, it's the turkey. Sounds like a helicopter. Yeah, the turkey. Yeah, these wild turkeys in California. They were doing their little mating dance out in this field, and I got my mics in the grass where they couldn't see them, and then they would come in and land. Swifts are these flocks of little, like, swallow-sized birds. These next clips are a bunch of little birds. I think most of these are these Swainson thrushes and other types of little birds dancing around on branches right near the mic. So you hear their wing flutters, these really bassy pulses, which are neat. These are Swainson thrushes. These are the ones I was showing you earlier. They're really intense. Some loons from earlier. I think this is a different loon takeoff here. Oh, so. Wilson snipe are really cool. They're a pretty small bird. They're like this big. But this sound is made by their tail feathers, like when they're diving. So it's not a vocalization, but it's made when they're flying. And it's some combination of their feathers when they're diving makes this really cool rising sound. And you hear it a lot of times at night, or during the day too. But a lot of times you'll hear this in combination with owls hooting, and it's really kind of eerie and pretty. But I like the character of it because it's created by their feathers and not a vocalization.
Yes.
Like that's their feathers making that sound. It's really cool. Yeah, so that was neat. I'm gonna skip the cranes because we already listened to that one. That was the sandhill cranes again. This is a swain. I think it's a swain. It's a Swainson's hawk, or it may be a different kind of hawk. But as far as I can tell, there's this nesting pair of them in the cliff near my parents' place, and I climbed up there and got pretty close to them. And this is them swooping by. So that was a library I put together. It's called Birds in Flight, which is a compilation of all sorts of different things. And because sound designers like that, because they're isolated and they can use those instead of like a carpet whooshing by a mic or something, they can use an actual bird wing sound. So that's the kind of overview of what I do with the ambiences and all of the field recording. There's one last thing I was going to show you. So I've been mostly focused on the field recording for the last few years, but I've also written a lot of music. The most recent thing I wrote, I hadn't written much music in the last few years mostly because of the field recording, but my mom had been real sick the last few years, and she passed away a few months ago, or about 3 months ago. And so, this is something I wrote to play at the funeral, in between when she died and the funeral. So I wrote this in a few days. So it's not the best recording, but it's me playing on the piano that I played on growing up, and I just wrote this little piece. And so, I don't know, I just want to share this because this is a lot of the stuff I'm still thinking about and processing right now while I'm at Holden. So I wrote this piece. And so, I'd also written a piece. So there's a little theme in the middle here that I'd also written a piece when my grandma had died about 10 years ago. And so I kind of mixed the themes together and wrote this little piano piece. So it's... this is me playing it. I can't play it without getting upset, so I'm gonna play you a little recording. But this is just the recording on my iPhone, so it's not the best, but it gives you an idea. So it's about 6 minutes long, and then if you have any questions about anything, we can chat. Dan. So, yeah, thanks for listening.